Welcome back, everyone, from our brief Christmas break. I was too excited to hold on to this episode any longer, so I wanted to make sure you all got to hear it before the new year. This week, we had a roundtable discussion with three Major League Scouts, and I absolutely loved recording this episode. Carlos Muniz of the Cleveland Indians, Jimmy Moran of the Cincinnati Reds, and Seth Moyer, formerly of the Minnesota Twins, gave us a comprehensive look into the evaluation and draft process of a player. Baseball talent evaluation has become so obsessed with lists and rankings, but those rankings really have zero to do with how MLB scouts are making their decisions on who should be drafted and in what round. In this episode, we covered just how nuanced the evaluation process is for each scout, what each scout loves to see in a player, and the importance of the in-home visit for scouts to start to understand what makes guys tick and what motivates them. They shared how analytics has given teams the ability to more accurately compare current amateur players with potential professional equivalents, and how, come draft time, you need to be scouting the other scouts to make sure that you have a chance to get the guys you want where you want them. Carlos also shares why he was so much higher on Shane Bieber than the rest of the industry, and how he was able to grab a future Cy Young winner in the fourth round. Putting together draft is a very strategic process, and there are so many additional decision-making factors that many of us don't consider when trying to make sense of who gets picked where. So whether you're a fan looking for more insight into how scouting or drafting works, or a player getting ready for this process, this episode is full of awesome information from three very, very well-regarded MLB scouts. So, without further ado, let's get into it. All right, Jimmy, Seth, Carlos, thank you so much for joining me today. It's a pleasure to have you all here. I wanted to get into it a little bit, starting, you guys are all scouts, have been at it for a while. I'd like to know a little bit, baseball's kind of transitioned now, I know, especially at the youth level where there's showcase baseball, tournament baseball has become such a big deal. It's a big change from when I was playing. How did you used to hear about kids? How was the transition to scouting now, trying to find kids where maybe you didn't have to look? You had to look harder in the past because everyone's sort of aggregated in one location now. Has that changed? And do you like the change? Has it made your job easier? Or is it more challenging now to evaluate kids, just seeing them in a smaller sample size maybe, as opposed to seeing them compete for a high school season?
You want me to shoot away here, Jimmy?
Yeah,
go ahead.
So I'm going on my ninth year, and I remember the, you know, kind of like that first year, they kind of just gave me a radar gun and a stopwatch and said, go get them. But where we are now and where I started, it's been a total 360, man. I remember like when I first started, like you were kind of, it's kind of hard to hide a guy in Southern California because everyone's going to know about him, but you could kind of hide him for a little bit back 9 years ago. Whereas now, with this data explosion, I could be watching five games at one time and I don't have to leave my office. You know, it has its pros and it has its cons, but it's definitely, you're able to see more players now than you were in the past. And you definitely have more resources to kind of lean on and to kind of help you assess that player now more than ever. But yeah, I don't know about you guys, but what do you think?
Do you like that transition?
You know, it's something new, and whenever you have something new, it takes some time to get used to. Obviously, you know, you've grown accustomed to certain routines. You know, hey, I'm gonna get in my car, I'm gonna knock out a couple high school games before I go see UCLA or UC Santa Barbara. I mean, now it's like it seems like it's constantly changing, and you have to kind of adapt to kind of tweaking those routines, and you just have to change, man. And change isn't easy, but you just got to find a way.
Yeah. To go off that, you know, this will be my fifth draft and all, like, not so much the video has really exploded here in the last, you know, year or two, but all I really know is, you know, the showcase circuit and the East Coast Pro, the area codes, PG National, the big one that they got going, you know, that's kind of just how how it is now. And is it great? No. But for us, when you can walk around and see 30, 40, 50 guys and write your follow, that just saves you so much time and so much effort. So I just feel that, is it great? You know, I don't really get much out of it except being able to check off a few boxes on each kid and, you know, be like, yeah, we'll see you in the spring. But again, that's kind of all I know. And that's just how the game has gone these past, I'd say 10-ish years or so.
So with that dynamic, you'll go use these tournaments and these showcases as an opportunity to like first get eyes on somebody. But if you love them, you're still going to go out and try to watch as many high school starts as they made that year or college starts or whatever they're doing.
Oh, of course. Yeah. The great thing is you can just get eyes on the guy, and it's great to, those events are good to see the kid for the first time. Cause you'll see some twitch, you'll see some bat speed, some athleticism. You'll see the velo, the spin, the breaking ball and stuff like that. What you won't see is, you know, the batting practice, the pregame routine and all those types of other things that go into writing that full report. So it's great to get a look. It's not great if you're going in there and saying, oh, this kid, he's got to be our pick or such and such. Right. It's not, that's really not, that's not the use for me at least.
Right. Seth, what about for you?
Yeah. I was doing it the same amount of time as Jimmy, and I felt the same, like the summer going into it and the fall, we're just casting a big net, you know, sort of identifying things that you like or characteristics, whether it's tools or instincts or whatever that you like in a player. And it's compiling really the biggest list you can at that point in the year. I think what it's done, the switch to analytics, is really forced guys to dig deeper, not necessarily just with tools, but a lot of it is like you have to get to know the kid, because really that's the only separation at this point. There's all the data you want, all the TrackMan data, all the blast motion, anything you want. So really the separator in a lot of ways is the makeup and the personality and how the player is growing over time. So the maturation process. So I think it's really good in a way that like you get your eyes on that number of players, because it gives you a comparison to players throughout the rest of the year. You know, when you hear these names come up, you've seen them. So you can say like, well, this is where this guy stacks up in comparison. Does that mean that's who the player is going to be in 10 years? No, but at least you have a moment in time that you can capture and move it forward, you know? So for me, that's really what it's about, is like, it has made it more convenient because you get to see them play the best players, which it's nice to see them facing guys that are equal talent. And the other piece of that though, is like, you have to follow up with it. If you're relying strictly on that, then you're not going to know that the guy grew 3 inches in the spring, or, you know, like high school players, they mature so much just over like Christmas break. They come out and
right.
Everybody's stronger and everybody's throwing harder. So it's really about casting a net and just checking and checking and checking. So it makes you dig deeper, in my opinion.
So when you start to get specific with a guy that you have seen, you like, he's your area, this could be a good fit for you, he checked your boxes, now you're ready to pursue him, are there certain like tangible things you're kind of looking for from a maturation process? Like, do you want to see him? Do you need to see him throw X number of innings successfully? Do you need to see a certain type of competitive AB in a certain setting? Like, now that you're getting him in a game situation, are there certain things that you would really like to see from him?
Well, I think that's where it starts to funnel down, right? That's where like they start to separate themselves from their peers. Is they're like, hey man, this is what like a mature approach would be in this situation. The game, this kid can slow it down. It's speeding up on all the other kids his age, or, you know, anything like that. Even in the in-homes, when you're asking them questions, how well do they know themselves? How well are they able to function in that setting? And how really at the end of the day, you're just trying to figure out like, is this guy going to be able to get the most out of himself? Right. Can he do that? Be motivated. And I think you do see a lot of that on the field, but I don't think you see it if you're not talking to the kids and their parents and stuff, you don't really know.
Do you think, Carlos, this is maybe for you, in the period that you've scouted, as this adjustment has happened for players as well as obviously scouts, for the players, has there been a shift in maybe mentality from kids? Do you have to dig deeper to find the kids that you used to really like because this is like the dynamic has shifted? Or do you think that these kids are better prepared for the next level because they're so experienced with playing against the best?
That's a great question. To touch base on what Jimmy said about the showcase circuit is that you're able to walk away with like 100 follows, right? You're able to put a little dot next to those kids, but it doesn't give you the whole picture. And what Seth was saying about the makeup, that's probably the most important thing of the whole process. So it gives you a starting point. It gives you a small sample size when you see the kid in the tournament in the summer, so to say, and then you kind of want to see that projection. You want to see that arrow kind of going, kind of trending up, okay? So this kid, if he weighed 170 in the summer, and then now the season's about to start in February, now he's 195, and there's some physicality to his whole, to his body, to his athleticism. He's throwing harder. And so what you're trying to do is you're trying to kind of find those missing pieces to the puzzle and kind of find out like how this happened. You know, obviously this kid's a hard worker, he's competitive. So you just kind of want to see those arrows pointing up, Zach. But at the same time, with all this information and these showcase events, there's also a con to it in that not everyone gets to participate in these events because it costs money. Can't afford the tournament fees, the hotel fees, the travel team monthly fee. Those are the kids that are being lost in the mix. And, you know, we as scouts, I think we got to do a better job of kind of digging deep and finding where these kids are, because it's not fair for everyone if you don't have the resources to play, because you might get lost in the shuffle.
That makes a lot of sense. It has become, it's an expensive game to play at this point when you have to sign up for all these tournaments and travel to Arizona or wherever you may have to go.
Right. And the better player you are, or, you know, the industry tells you are, the more you have to go to these, you know, they make you go to these events. Oh, yeah, I got to go Arizona. Then I got a weekend in Vegas. And then I got to fly cross country. And then I got to come back. And then I'm going back to Arizona. And then I'm going, you're crisscrossing the country and you're 17 years old. Congratulations if you can do it. That's, you know, that's a blessing, but not everybody can. And you still need to be able to do your homework and your due diligence on kids and find that kid that play, you know, neighborhood or rec ball or little league or travel ball. Like, that's where there's still kids there. There's still players there. And you still need to be able to, you know, like build that relationship and go in and see that kid play there.
Right. Are there, this is kind of when we get into these big national caliber players, obviously I think college is a little different, right? Because you're seeing kids more equivalent per se, but at the high school level, you get some of these big national caliber players. Everybody loves them. I guess this applies to college too. Are there ever guys where you're just like, oh man, I know everyone's in love here, but it's not my guy? Does that ever happen?
Every year. And every scout will have that, a different guy, you know, like I could probably tell you this would
be my,
you
don't need to get dirty at all.
I've gone through four drafts. I could probably tell you eight guys that are dudes that are, I was just out on. And, you know, that's just kind of, for whatever reason, whether it's off field, on field, whatever, I just, not my cup of tea. And you just need to realize, you know, kind of what player you like, don't like, and give the kid credit as well for what he is able to do. Because you got to remember that this is very hard and very difficult to play. So, yes, give the kid credit, but you can still, as a scout, be out on a first round pick.
Right. Is there any traits that you see once you start to see a guy that you like just, you know, fall in love with, where maybe you rank a guy higher than your peers? Maybe you, Seth?
Yeah, for me, I mean, you got three guys that like to talk about pitching on here, but pitchability. I mean, I think it's so undervalued now that there's a million guys that throw hard. I think we've shown as an industry collectively that we can teach velocity. So I think the ability to pitch, when you see that and you see it trending, especially with the younger players, because, you know, if their body is immature or they're still gangly or they're whatever, and they still have the feel and the touch, you can make a pretty safe jump in thinking that they're going to be able to add velocity.
Right.
Whereas, you know, I mean, for me, that's the biggest thing that I think we tried to get away from with old school scouting, right? Was it like everybody sat behind the radar gun, or at least this is what was told me. I wasn't there, but that's what
we all saw trouble with the curve.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, you saw the same guy pitch every day. He lost his job.
But I think there's something to that, right? Like for everybody, the application of their tools or their skills, like to the game, I think it is interpreted in a lot of different ways, scout to scout, whatever. But how they use their tools to win or to achieve whatever their goal is within the process, like that's sort of how my evaluations typically work. That's like, because I think everybody can judge like how hard somebody's throwing, and you know, and at this point everybody can see their spin rate, everybody can see their axis, we all know that, but how do they use it, or are they able to use it or harness it? For me, that's where I think it's at.
Zach, I think if you were to ask 10 scouts, you know, what do you look for in a player, you're going to get 10 different opinions, right? I mean, it's just normal, you know, it's what makes us unique. We each have, you know, different qualities, and so to say, in how we evaluate a position player, a pitcher, and not one of them is right. I mean, but some scouts like power over, you know, finesse. You know, other scouts weigh different qualities a little bit more than others. So it just all depends. You know, it all depends what you're looking for and what qualities you're looking for in these players.
Is there something for you personally that you like when you see that something about a guy where you just tend to gravitate towards those types of players? Do you find yourself drafting like similar guys year after year because you really like something about guys like that?
Like, you know, it's funny you said that because yeah, I find myself drafting at times, you know, it's all hit or miss. It just depends on the draft, but you know, pitchability, right-handed pitching. That's what kind of stands out for me. And obviously when you go to the ballpark, the easy ones are the guys that are throwing 95, 96, 97, right? Anyone can see those guys, but it's the other guys, you know, like, you know, the guys that are kind of like 88 to 92 and you're trying to figure out, man, can this guy get stronger? What if we can kind of add this or, you know, get him to better checkpoints? Those are the fun guys, you know, because some people might think they're kind of maybe they don't have a lot of upside, and other people might think, okay, well, he's only missing this and that, and if we can get him to these certain checkpoints, we might have some upside and some value here down the road. So like I said, every scout's different, and it's fun to talk to Jimmy and Seth about pitching because you're going to go down many rabbit holes, man, and it's never ending, the amount of information that each scout has. And but yeah, there are some certain qualities that stand out for me. And number one is for, you know, for a pitcher is the athleticism.
You and I had a conversation at UCLA, you know, last month, whatever it was, and you knew something was special about Bieber the first time you saw him throw. And, you know, I could sense the conviction in your voice that it was going to be better than anyone thought. And you were, you know, fortunate enough to be able to draft him and sign him. What, you know, he was the 88, 92 college guy that you were talking about. One or two things that you saw that was like, no, this guy's special.
Yeah, no, great question. And it's kind of cool that you can hear that in my voice when I was talking about Bieber, because to this day, like, I still get so happy talking about him, even after the fact. But before all this even happened, like, I was pumped up about the guy. When I would go watch 88 to 91, and the one thing that always stood out, the one thing that was always consistent with Biebs was the command. You know, we've all played this game. We know how challenging it is, how difficult it is to go up there and repeat your delivery, repeat the quality of your pitches day in, day out. This guy was doing it every start, every inner squad, regardless of if it was 88 to 91, he was still painting the black. And that was the one thing that stood out, is like, this guy is probably one of the best strike throwers I've ever seen. What's he missing? And then that's where it started there. It's like, Okay. And I must have saw him like five times. That was, and that's crazy for a scout to see a
player. Indians were in.
Because you're trying to figure him out. You're like, wow, man, what is it about this kid? I keep going and I'm seeing 88 to 91, but it's something different. And then that 88, 91 was missing barrels. It was missing bats. And it's funny because he didn't even have a curveball in college. It was a fastball, slider, changeup. And you talk about the teachability, the aptitude. When he came into our system, they're like, hey, hold the curveball like this. And then, boom, immediately started spinning it and started throwing it for strikes. So, yeah, it was a command that stood out that I kept following. I kept pursuing that. And he was an amazing athlete on the mound, dude. And I think there's a lot of qualities that kind of lined up, and it was like the perfect timing. And it was just fun. It was fun to watch him pitch. You know, and then towards the end, as you get closer to the draft, Zach, you're starting to go in there and scout the scouts. Who's on them?
That's an interesting element.
Yeah, who's on them? That's when it gets fun, right, guys?
Yeah, no, the last couple of weeks when, you know, you're going in for those last looks and you want to see who's at the ballpark, and if it's a hitter that you like, who takes the walk to the open side, and you're like, do we pick before them, after them? Do we got him in the right spot? That's when it really gets fun.
That's funny. That's an element you definitely wouldn't think about unless you know he's not going to be our first round pick, but man, would I love him right after that.
Right.
Very cool. So, okay, kind of to play off that point, Major League Baseball has become, you know, kind of tools versus tools, right? Well, they'll rush some guys to the league faster than maybe they would have in years past just because the stuff is too good or the hitting ability is too good. I don't think that's, like, you know, super profound to say at this point. But you guys talked just now about seeing Shane, who was 88, 91, but could just absolutely flat out play. Where do you think – do you think the tools versus tools thing has really impacted drafting? Or would Shane Bieber have been a first rounder in 1998, but now today, because we're so in love with stuff, he was not? Or do you think this is just kind of continued along the same trend line that it always has been, but the stuff is just at a premium at the highest level?
I think the stuff is always going to trump everything else. Like that's the main feature. You know, a young kid up to 97, that's pretty good. You know, like 17 years old throwing 96, 97. Hey, man, let's take that guy. Versus the polished right-handed pitcher. You know, that's, you're kind of thinking, how much upside? But really has know-how ability and can really compete and go out there and get out. So two different kind of animals, right? 17 and 21 years old. So I don't know where Bieber would have been drafted in 1998. That's a great question.
It's funny you talk about stuff first. Oh, go ahead, Seth.
No, that's all right. Go, coach.
Oh, we were just saying you're a coach. The stuff for stuff, and you know, I remember my first 2 years, I'd fire in a report, and you know, I'd say a kid was throwing 93, but might need, you know, some more velo. And he's now in the front office with us. He was our scout director, Chris Buckley. Was like, you realize that 93 is still hard. It's not hard enough anymore in a sense. It was just that you need more, like they just got to get more and more and more. And he's sitting there saying, well, in 1998, we're talking about this kid as the first pick, somewhere in that first 10 picks. So that's just kind of how that's changed. But, you know, the harder they throw in the big leagues, the harder they're going to have to, you know, catch up and on the amateur side. So it's just kind of that circle of evolving.
I think, yeah, I completely agree. I think some of it too is just like they realize that these guys, like, they can exploit a weakness in a big league hitter like today. Like that slider, we put it against, with the analytics, we put it against every other slider in the major leagues, and it's just as good. And I think that ability to compare those two different levels of players is pretty new. So I think previously they would send it out and just have it step up one level at a time, low A, high A, double A, and just like wait for them to plateau. And now I think, you know, some of it too is our understanding for their body and their movement patterns, and understanding that, like, hey, this guy might not last forever. but he does have a plus slider. So let's get him in the big leagues. Let's see it work in a situation that he can be successful, and let's move on. And let's just ride it while we can. And I think that you see that more even in the big leagues now with guys that like might throw 95% sliders and maybe 5% fastballs. That's never happened before. Right. What they realize is like this guy can do, he can throw a slider a lot better than he can throw his fastball. And I don't think before we were digging into it that deep. I don't think before we were thinking like, well, this college guy has a 90 mile an hour slider and it's really good. Let's compare it to a big league 90 mile an hour slider. Oh, they're the same. It never happened. And so now we're in a new age of saying like, that's what a real slider looks like. See, and you can compare it to it. And I think that's why you're seeing that progression of the big leagues just move so much quicker in a lot of cases.
In the past, you'd be like, oh, we need to develop a third pitch, or he doesn't command the outer half well enough. But now you're willing to say, this guy does this one thing super elite. This is something I talk about a lot of times with people. Like anytime I feel like fans are watching the game on TV and they're like, oh, this guy's stuff is subpar, or I don't know what he's doing to get all these outs. There's something he's doing elite that is beating people. You may not see it with the naked eye. It might not say 97, but there's something to the effect of this pitch moves in a certain way that we just can't handle. So I think that's kind of an interesting take of, you know, rather than try to develop this complete product, find yourself something that we know can work at the major league level today.
Right. Yeah. It's closed that gap between the, like if a guy has an elite slider and well, you don't know if he's going to be a starter in the future or a reliever. He's got two, you know, if it's 94, 96 right now with that special slider, bum rush him up there, let him get outs, and then, you know, like the Chris Sale plan, essentially. Like, that's kind of how things might be trending towards, especially with the top round draft picks.
Let's remove the Shane Beavers of the world. What about the guys who have, like, really quality college careers? They're competitive players. Maybe they don't – like Shane, you know, obviously commanded the strike zone amazingly well. Let's say they're just like a pretty good competitive player. Have you found yourself taking less of those guys in exchange for the guy that like threw eight innings but flashed 96 once? Or is it – do you still want to see – do you still take the other guy because you know he can play the game well?
I mean, every kid has a spot in the draft and has a career. It just depends on – where your organization and you know your group is satisfied with taking that guy. You know, you get the pitchability righty in the fifth round, sixth round, seventh round. Well, then you also start popping the college reliever that does just throw 96. You know, it's kind of balance, but then again, every team is different and kind of seeing where they can get value from that player.
So is that kind of the same, your guys' same MO?
Yeah, I mean, there's – everybody, I just think there's value for everybody at some point, right? Like, I hate to break it down to finances, but there's a point where like certain people have more value, right? If you're comparing a guy that, you know, is a lower velocity guy who has had results in college, but aesthetically it isn't what you're looking for, there's still a spot because he still does something really well. So you're not, I think a lot of times the misperception of scouts is that we're like checking negative boxes on people. But I think really what we're doing is finding something we like in everybody. So that's kind of more our job, is to be like, well, I like him a lot. Where does he add up to these other guys? Well, he does command the ball really well, but this other guy has a tool that I don't know if we can teach him to throw 100. So then that's the dialogue, is like, which one is worth more? And so that's where you line them up. But there's a spot where each player is valuable. And I think as an organization or as a scout, you're trying to figure out like, where would he be most valuable? And that's like when the draft is going and you're looking at it, you're like, this guy has unbelievable value right here in the eighth round. His name is Zach Weiss. He's from UCLA. He's got stuff, got four pitches. And that's where you're like, he could be a starter. And then all of a sudden his value goes up and now it's worth every penny that you paid him.
Interesting. Are there certain benchmarks, I guess, with the shift to analytics? Like everyone's, you know, to your point of spin rates and axes and vertical carries and same thing with swings now. are there certain benchmarks that you find, like, for a guy to be considered elite, like he at least has to produce at X, Y, and Z? Or is it still a little bit of eye test where you're like, that guy just hits the ball differently than other people? Maybe for you, Carlos?
I think it's a combination of everything you just said. You know, like, this guy has a special power. This guy can command it better than anyone. This guy has vertical ride at the elite level. And it's getting all those traits, whether you're using TrackMan or Blast, and feeling comfortable with the player. You know, I think at the end of the day, you want to draft the player that you know is going to make an impact in your system. But it's combining the data with the traditional old school scouts, and just coming up with the best value for the player. Like, does this guy fit here in the fourth? But I wouldn't say there's one benchmark that stands out. I think it's a combination of a lot of traits, especially with data and analytics.
So there's no, yeah. So I guess there's not something that's like, to play for our org, you got to do X, Y, and Z. It's much more about, I guess, something that I don't think about a lot is the, where does the guy slate? Where does he fit? I think that's an interesting thing that often gets overlooked. And you're like, you know, why was so-and-so picked above so-and-so? And there's so many more factors that go into it than the naked eye would tell you of, this guy throws harder, strikes out more people, does this better, is a better person, but he still didn't go higher than this guy because of whatever, financially or where we were in the draft.
Financially, you talk about the arm action, the bot, the movement. Maybe this team had a bad in-home visit with the kid and he was lower than this guy, and that's just how it gets all shuffled up and it gets played out.
Are there – the in-home visit's interesting. So that's like your only chance to really like get to know a guy personally that you guys are about to invest a lot of money into. Is that – obviously, I'm sure, you know, you got to hear the parents out. You got to see what the kid's bedroom looks like. I don't know. But like, is there – are there like certain things that you're just like – do you ever leave those and you're just like, whoa, I can't go there? Or – do you ever leave there and you're like, you know what, this is our guy at X. What if I can get him at X, Y, and Z because of that?
The in-homes are one of my favorite, man. Because watching the kid play, it's cool and stuff, but it's just like, who is this guy? Like, what motivates this guy? What drives this guy? What kind of passion does he have for the game? And then the in-home comes up and you go out there and you ask him the questions that you want to ask. You know, obviously you've seen him play or you've seen him pitch a good amount of time. And now it's like, okay, I'm going to ask you some pretty good, interesting questions here. I have walked away from in-homes from like high priority guys where I'm just like, yeah, really not on this guy. You know, I don't think there's, I have some concerns with the overall feel. I don't even know if he wants to play ball. Or there's some other times where I'm walking out and I'm like, dude, this guy's sharp. This guy has some aptitude. He's driven. He has grit. Wow, you know, and he may not be the top priority guy, but if you got to make a decision on who you trust, those in-homes are really important, man, regardless of the status of the player, you know, the industry value.
Do they still have guys take that like tap test or the long form assessment? Is that still a thing?
Yeah, every team, I don't know about every team. I know like with us, we had the tap test and then we developed our own in-home test. But yeah, there's still the aptitude test that goes around to the prospects.
Gotcha. I always felt like that could be kind of fudged. I remember having a high school visit and somebody gave me this.
I mean,
it, like the answers are like, the question would be like, do you enjoy working hard? And it's like, well, I definitely know what the right answer is.
Well, I think that's a piece of it though, too, right? Is like in your in-home, the number one thing you're trying to walk away from is like, who is this guy? So like, you don't even know with like a personality test, like that might be the best thing they could put down in relationship to their tools. Like, I don't know what comes out of that test, but him saying like, no, I don't like to work hard. And then you go out and he's the best player in the country. it might give you a different perspective, right? Like there's more opportunity here. Like if we can just figure out a way to motivate this individual, the sky is the limit, rather than being like, yeah, like checking the boxes for like hardest worker, most likely to end up being a high school coach.
Right.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. You get the one that, you know, the kid says, I work hard, or everybody's going to tell you they work hard, but yet, you know, you go to a high school game and I'm at the field before you, you're not, how hard are you working?
Right.
So that's kind of where you get it to all kind of line up, and it goes to the in-home visit where you can say anything you want. You can, you know, go about whatever you want to talk about, but yet your answers, if you remember an in-home, you remember the answers that the kid gave you, the family gave you. Now you go to the field and you see if it matches up. And if it matches up, then great. You know, like, sign me up, I'm all in. If it doesn't match up, then we have a problem, because somewhere along the way, you lied to me. Right. And that's kind of where, again, you know, well, the industry says you're here. Well, I don't see that.
Right. Man, 17-year-old Weiss was playing checkers. He thought he was playing, you know, Risk.
That's one, like, to that point, I think it's one of the biggest things for young athletes is to recognize that, like, A, as an area scout, like, you're not making the final decision on whether or not this kid is drafted by your organization. Like, you're the first guy in there. Like, does your opinion matter? Yeah, but, like, on draft day, it's going to go through a lot of people before they ask me, right? So it's not a make it or break it situation for kids, or like when a scout comes to a game and the kid tries extra hard and takes himself out of his own game, it's really not even about that, right? Like, if we're evaluating you for what you can do, maybe it's good that you had a bad game and you responded well to it, rather than just frustration and trying to work and trying to show off these skills that you've never even, if you haven't even tried it, and then all of a sudden you're trying to throw a slider in a game, it's like, we're judging that slider for what it is, not what everyone in the world wants you to have, a fourth pitch. Like, we're actually there to just say, yeah, it's decent, or it has a chance. If it's bad that day, it doesn't mean that we're like, oh, this guy's no good at baseball.
Right.
It's not our job.
Yeah. There's still a reason why you're in the ballpark.
Yes.
Right. That's interesting. So can you take us through a little bit, kind of what you said, as the area guy, you don't have final say. I'm sure there's times you absolutely love a dude, you're going to bat for him, you want him in the first, and your team, you'll be happy if you can grab him later and your team is, you know, willing to do that with you. What's kind of that process like when you fall in love with the guy and you really want him? I'm sure it's different from different organizations, but kind of, obviously, I'm sure, you know, seniority and pull, and how's your success been in the past with guys like this, but let's say you really want a guy. Can you kind of run us through a little bit about the system of, this is kind of how it would go so that we could get him?
Can we go to Los on this one? He gets every guy he wants. So.
All of them.
To the point of track record.
It's just a collective process, really. Like, to answer your question, like, if you have a gut feel on a guy, it's about timing. Like, where does this guy fit in the draft? Like, and if you think he fits in the 9th and 10th round, and you talk to your guys and hopefully they saw him, and if they didn't, there's enough information out there nowadays to just say, okay, this is what stands out. We have enough video. We have an in-home. We have a questionnaire. So, like, if you have everything, if you check the boxes with, like, the questionnaire, the in-home, maybe you might have talked to a coach and you started the process on this kid and you really like him and he's not industry famous, there's a place for these guys. Obviously, you don't want to go leaps and bounds and overdraft a guy and take him in the 6th round when you could have got him in the 12th round. But there's a place for these guys, and it all happens collectively, like just breaking the kid down and talking to other national cross-checkers and just seeing where he fits. And, you know, like Seth said earlier, the money, you know, like, do we have enough money? You know, that can impact the decision as well.
Is everything so consensus based though with guys? Like, when you say, I think he's a 6th rounder, but I don't want to draft him in the 3rd, but maybe you truly believe that he is a 3rd rounder. I understand, you know, the games of scouting where you don't want other teams to you want him as low as you can get him naturally. But are there times when you're like, he's being talked about as a 6th rounder, but really he's better than that? Is there like, does that happen to you where you do try to overdraft because you don't actually believe he's a sixth rounder? You believe he's a second rounder.
That's when you can like, you know, there's no, you don't put a kid in whatever round because the industry says that's the round he's going in. You know, you could put kids as high as you want just to, you know, sound the alarm for your group, your scouting department. If your group says that this kid's a fourth rounder, then he's there in the fourth round. You take him in, you know, you feel like convicted in taking him in the fourth round. Now the Twins, the Indians, the 29 other teams might have thought he was a sixth rounder, but you guys felt that that guy was a fourth rounder, and that's where you take him. You're comfortable, and you make that choice and kind of live with it and make him a big leaguer.
Right. I guess I just think it's interesting because to your point of there is so much nuance to each individual scout that you guys aren't going to have the same opinion on every guy, but there are like, you know, Baseball America top 200 lists or whatever, where we've tried to aggregate everyone's opinion into one nice, neat compiled list. And there's just no way it goes like that, especially when you have so many other factors in a draft, you know,
the big thing Carlos touched on, like the pool of money and stuff. Maybe you have to take that kid in the fourth round because, you know, he won't be there in the sixth round. Or you have that guy with your comp pick, second round pick, because he won't be there by the time your third round pick comes around. And then, well, you know, we saved $300,000 on that guy and gave it to a guy in the eighth round. It's just kind of the strategy is kind of fascinating if you really get in on the nuance.
Like the common rule remains, like if you like a guy as an organization, you got to go get him. Right. So like, you can't get beat by another team. When Jimmy is talking about scouting the scouts, if you go into Bieber and it's his last outing and you expect to be one of the few guys there and there's 22 scouting directors in there, you're like, that's 22 teams that might go get him before me. So that's how you gauge where they're at, not just with MLB.com, Jonathan Mayo, Keith Law.
Shout out.
You're gauging it by the company that's there, right? And right. The words that they're saying to you, and you're like, uh-oh. Like, I'm not the only guy here. Like, I'm not the only guy that thinks this. And also to the point of, like, you know, the fact that it's a group decision. Like, if Jimmy, Carlos, you and I are on the same scouting staff, if we're with the same organization, I want all three of your opinions because you might have seen something that I never even thought of. And like, I think that's probably,
or even the three of us got the good game and you got the bad game, and you need to know both sides.
Yes. And like, if you think you're smart enough to just go pick them, like, you haven't been scouting for very long. So like, you need all of those opinions. You need, because it's a humbling game on both sides of it. So getting that opinion from Jimmy where he's like, you know what, he did not handle adversity very well. Or like, he doesn't pitch very well out of the stretch. And I'm like, oh, well, he threw a no hitter the day I was there. So he didn't even.
Right.
So like, you need all of that, right?
No, it's very cool. Well, I appreciate you guys joining me. This was very informative for me. I enjoy hearing about this stuff. And I think it's the nuance of how to structure your draft.
Why? So you went in the eighth round? Sixth round pick, pitching the big leagues. Great pick. Better teammate.
Appreciate that. but I think the nuance of comparing your opinion on a guy, where we can realistically get him based on other people's opinion of him, and then how he slates as the projectable guy, where he starts to come into play, and that is, it's very cool, and it makes this whole thing such a jigsaw puzzle that I don't think a lot of people are very aware of. I think a lot of people think it's, man, I saw him, you know, the equivalent of win the Heisman. Guy's got to go first, you know, and realistically that's just not, there's so many other factors into it. So I appreciate you guys taking the time to kind of break it down for your own personal perspectives, as well as how your teams do things and kind of how the industry does things as a whole. So I appreciate it, guys, and it's been very cool. So. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Zach. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Zach.
Alrighty, guys.
Jimmy, Seth, I'll see you guys. Happy holidays, man.
Same to you guys. Talk to you guys soon.
Yeah.
See you later.